Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN. Perform, workout, energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. To help out, go to challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, seriously, one of our favorite people on the planet. He just came off of winning Ironman Italy. Not just winning, going 7:46:54, including an amazing 2:45:02 marathon. Mr. Cameron Wirth. Cam, how the heck you doing?
Good thanks, Bob. Gotta say, I never thought I'd hear that last part of your introduction ever.
I know, right?
Back to a few years ago when we first started doing this. So.
It was like, gosh, if I ever get down towards, if I get in the mid 250s, I'm gonna be somebody they got to worry about. And now you're running 2:45. I'm sitting there going, Cam, don't run 2:45 today. Save it for Kona.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were saying that, and I probably would have been saying that if I was watching, but. Fortunately, I was the one that was actually there controlling what was going on. And it certainly didn't feel like I was running that quick. And but then again, maybe that's the thing that I've been doing wrong. You know, you can sometimes try too hard, can't you? Especially in a sport that, it's not exactly top-end speed that you need. So, pretty incredible.
When I look at your transformation from an Olympic rower back in 2004 to then being a professional cyclist and then moving on to triathlon, when you're a professional cyclist, you're racing and you're on your bike, 300 some days a year, but you're racing 150 days a year in terms of
100
days. 80 to 100 days a year. And I know last year you did 8 full Ironmans and a couple 70.3s. Is it hard for you not to race more often as a professional triathlete just because you're so used to it?
It was really difficult this year doing those big, long, long blocks of, training. I mean, I really didn't do anything until the end of April this year, which is, normally I've done a couple of Ironmans by then.
So right.
That was a long preparation. But and then obviously tried to... I wanted to really push on for Challenge Roth, but had a bit of a crash a few weeks before and broke my nose and my ribs. So that kind of derailed any sort of preparation that effort I wanted to put in. I was flat out sort of trying to recover from that and went to Roth still and did the best I could. So that was a bit of a flat race and probably one that I couldn't push very hard because I just didn't have the condition to do so. So which maybe that was a blessing in disguise. Kept some energy in the tank for later in the year. And I've had a long, long training block since then, a few months. And I need to have confidence that I'm in shape. That was why before Ironman Australia, I went and did the Cairns international race just to get an idea. Tim Don was there, so I knew I'd get a yardstick of where I was at and went to Australia with a lot more confidence about what I could do. I actually get more fatigue from doing 70.3 because I'm not very conditioned. I'm not conditioned to run fast. I've just never done it. So when I try and run a 1:15, 1:14 sort of thing, that really hurts me for a long time. Whereas running a marathon is something I do every week in training and doesn't seem to have a lot of impact. So that was why the choice was made to just do what I'm more familiar with and the result was obviously somewhat of a surprise, pleasant surprise, and gives me a lot more confidence now heading into Kona.
Well, at the same time, it gives you a lot more confidence, but also the other guys who might have gone, okay, if Cam breaks 3 hours, that's really what we expect from him. So we can give him X, not give him. He's going to take X amount of time from us, but we've got to make sure we don't. he doesn't have 8 or 10 minutes off the bike. When they see 245, I think that changes the way those Jan Frodeno and all those other guys ride the bike, don't you think?
But I mean, perhaps. I don't know. I mean, they've all been racing this sport for 20 plus years, a lot of them. And, you know, I guess to all of a sudden decide they're going to ride faster and expect to be able to also do their normal run and swim would. Yeah, it would be. I'd feel bad for them if they were able to do that, because they've wasted that energy, wasted that talent for the last 20 years. So, you know, it'd be great to see. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they'd, you know, feel like they need to approach it. You know, the reality is, I've still never proven I can do it in Kona.
So, right. Yeah.
You know, that's and I'm. All I can do is keep progressing as an athlete, and I've got him better and better at Kona the couple of times I've been. You know, I'm obviously in better shape now than I was this time last year. So, you know, I'm expecting that progression to continue. Whether to say that it's something that I think is good enough to win is simply arrogant. It's not what I believe. I believe I still need to go there and prove myself. And until you do that.
Right.
You know, you can't. And that's another reason I raced on the weekend. I mean, I knew where my training was at. I knew what I was doing. But I have no idea why that is puts me in a race yet. I have no idea what that reference is to Kona. And so to go to Kona off that, you know, we have no idea whether that's good enough to win or come fifth or come tenth or come top 20. But to go to a race and then know that you're in good shape, and you can obviously compare that to previous races, it does give me a hell of a lot more confidence leading into Kona.
So you've been spending a lot of time this summer with Josh Amberger, and obviously he's the guy who's normally first out of the water. And
and
so he's first out of the water, and obviously you've helped him with his cycling, I'm assuming, as well.
Well, not really. He didn't. He only came a couple of times.
Yeah, so it was mainly just a swim.
Yeah, he planned on coming a lot more, I think. But, a few days in, he started doing his own thing. He'd still swim with me, but, I mean, he was obviously preparing for Nice. And you know, it was great for me having Josh there. And I think also great for Josh, because I feel like I do train quite hard. I think I'm able to maintain a very high level of training, and you know, to have Josh there and sort of reiterate that as someone I have a huge amount of respect for and has had a lot of success in the sport, you know, gave me huge confidence in myself that, you know, you probably have got the capacity to be successful in this sport. And you know, and then Josh has sort of indicated that perhaps he had sort of lost sight of that a bit in the previous years, you know, the level that perhaps is required, and he's found that he's now gone home back to Australia and he's able to push himself, you know, more. So, you know, I hope that rubbed off well on him. It was great having him there, obviously, for the swimming for me, and I think good for him too. I think he was disappointed in 70.3 that everyone was still there with him, but I said to him, you know, that's the great athletes. You know, it's what they can do when others are around them. You know, and he's used to being on his own, and
right.
Now he's got to readjust and figure out and realize, well, wait a minute, they're killing themselves to stay with him. So you either keep attacking them and try and drop them, or you use that later in the race, and that's an adjustment for him to make. So, which is same for me on the bike. You know, the guys are getting closer.
Right.
You have to adjust to that. So, he was great. It was great. It was the first time I'd ever trained with a triathlete, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
But I know that hadn't Jan Frodeno reached out in the past and said, hey, let's go train together?
Kind of. We went for a run, and that was it. And then after that, it kind of, we sort of tried to cross paths, but something sort of come up or whatnot. But I like to surround myself with people that are better than me in everything.
Right.
I really do. I you know, because I don't ever want to think that I'm good enough. I don't ever want to rest on where I'm at in any aspect of the sport. I think the sport is in a really exciting time, you know, where it's getting a lot more attention. There's getting a lot more, you know, expertise entering the sport. I mean, I obviously, and I feel, you know, quite happy with me, just basically the guys from Nike, as you know, the Breaking 2 project, and those guys now taking a keen interest in the sport, at least in me. But of course, that'll end up flowing over into the sport at some point. And that's really exciting. I guess, it wasn't since Mark Allen when Nike had a bit of a keen interest in the sport. You'd expect the sport and the results and the performances of all the athletes to have a linear progression with that, increase in expertise. Yeah. Now interested in what's going on in Ironman.
What you don't see a lot is people coming into the sport as a world-class level cyclist. And obviously you own the Ironman course record on the bike. You rode 409, and that's probably been the biggest change in the sport I've seen over the last number of years, is where it used to be you rode 415 in Kona, you were right up there. Now if you're not riding, sub 410, or you're not riding around 410, you're pretty much off the back. But for somebody to come in as a cyclist, I mean, we've had a Steve Larson from the past and guys like that, to become that good a runner, how tough has it been? Because running is such a different thing, especially to pick it up later in life.
Yeah, I've always said, I think the greatest thing you can learn is the ability to learn.
Yeah.
And when I want to learn something, I've always been able to learn, figure it out. And back to the guys from Nike. I mean, Brett Kirby, who looks after me personally through there at Nike, and he's my contact. He has obviously worked with Eliud Kipchoge the last few years, specifically, and they've done a lot with him with the Breaking 2 project and, of course, setting the world record and winning London. And, Kipchoge is, in my opinion, the greatest endurance athlete active, on the planet at the moment with what he's doing.
Yep.
And when you sit in a room with those guys, you're up there in Portland, Oregon, you're down in the dungeon, the secret area, and you're going over the plan, and you're literally doing the same plan as Kipchoge.
That's pretty cool.
To the day. I mean, he raced London, I raced Paul Macquarie. It was exactly the same day, Ironman Australia. He's having another crack at Breaking 2 Hours on October 12th. Obviously, we've got Kona. It gives you a huge amount of confidence to do what you're told. And the thing is, though, doing what I was told was a hell of a lot more than I ever dreamed I'd be able to do running, volume-wise, let alone add in everything else. So we had to be very careful there. And my coach, Tim Kerrison, on an overall sense, the head of performance at Team Sky, or INEOS now, he said, listen, we have to give this running the respect it deserves. I mean, you're trying to do a program that the best runner on the planet is doing. You're obviously not trying to run the same speed, but you're trying to do the work, or a large part of it. And so until you can handle that, and get to the end of a week and go, I can actually replicate that next week and next week and next week, we're just going to cut everything else out. And so for, 3 to 4 months of the year, I basically only ran. I barely swam, barely rode my bike, barely did anything else to give my body a chance to actually build up to being able to do those sessions and maintain that volume. And the end result is, I can maintain, 100 plus K a week pretty comfortably, and on top of the normal swimming and cycling that I've done in the past. But it's taken all year to do it, and that's why there was, obviously a lot less racing. And because a lot of the times, if I turned up to a race, I would have not only been destroyed in the swim, but I would have been absolutely annihilated on the bike. And so we obviously didn't really want to put myself in that
position. No, you don't want to take your biggest threat and have people going, oh, Cam can't ride the bike anymore. That's a problem.
Can't ride his bike. Yeah. So it was important to pick our battles, so to speak. And, the only blemish, of course, was Ross. But
injured.
Yeah, when you got a couple of broken bones, yeah. I still was pretty happy with third. And to be honest, I was pretty proud of the way I was able to run away from McNamee and Bardano in the last 10K, which I think people overlooked.
Yeah.
And that was a personal thing for me. I knew what was the dynamic of the race. I kind of forgotten about the guys in front and was just really focused on them and trying to learn as much from those guys who'd podiumed in Kona before, how they structure a run and figure out a way to make sure I finish ahead of them. So I still got something out of that, you know, with eyes on Kona.
Been
a good year.
And don't forget that you ran by Javier Gomez in Kona last year.
Yeah, he was the first pro ever passed on the run.
I know. You know? That's a pretty good pro to pass.
Yeah.
So, I don't think Javier put that in his resume. I don't think he added that.
No, I don't think so. And he doesn't really talk to me. So I don't think he's too happy by the fact that I bring that to people's attention. But he's a great champion, isn't he? And
yes.
He's had a great year back in the ITU. And you know, that's another thing, Bob, but you know, you and I will discuss a bit more when I'm down there for the CAF weekend. But, you know, after this, just seeing the way Javier has been able to drop between the two distances has made us have a look at that. And Racing Italy was another side sort of plot to that in freeing me up for next year. So without giving too much more away, that's something we're going to look at after Kona.
Well, you know, it's fascinating, and when I was interviewing Javier in France, and we were talking about next year and the Olympics and with Ironman and with 70.3 Worlds being in late November, reality is that he can focus on all three. He can focus on the Olympics. That gives him some time to, I think he's doing Barcelona so that he can potentially, like you did with Italy, go win there, get his spot for Kona, and then do Olympics, Kona, 70.3 Worlds with a couple months in between. So it's next year is shaping up to be pretty amazing. But the other thing I remember last year when you did Roth and you were you're starting to run and you have Sebastian Kienle going by and you're like, oh my God, that guy looks like crap. He's not going to last. He's going to, you know, there's no way he's going to finish looking like that. Then Jesse Thomas goes by and he looks worse.
Even worse.
Right.
Way worse.
Right. Yeah. And what you learned from that was they looked like crap, but they still ran in the 240s.
I mean, it taught me they're conditioned. You know, they're just so well conditioned for this. And we weren't there. And in Kona, as much as I tried to improve between them and Kona, which I certainly did, I witnessed it again with more athletes, you know, nine actually, and then I retook Gomez. But, you know, that's been the biggest thing. We knew that I just needed to become conditioned to run and become conditioned to run when your legs are really tired because you've just ridden your bike. And I love it how everyone has this opinion of me over biking. I'd say that the relative effort of my rivals is far greater than mine is on the bike.
No question.
I don't go anywhere near my capacity on the bike.
No.
And so the reality is my competitors are just much better conditioned to get off the bike and run. And it's logical that would take time. I mean, I'm sure people would like to throw stones and make insinuations, but the doping era you could accelerate that for sure. This has taken me 3 years to figure that out, you know, and we're still figuring it out. It's a long-term thing, you know, if you're going to put in the work. So, I've just been so fortunate, Bob, that I've been at the front of the races. And when you're at the front, you get to learn from the best. And that's a humongous advantage. And it's certainly been something that has been able to probably, you know, allow me to do it quicker than others would have. Because you know where you need to get. So that's been great.
I remember last year when we were doing the Ironman viewing party and doing an interview with Tri Club of San Diego, one of the lines that people at the Tri Club still talk about is when we talked about you had done 8 Ironmans that year. And you're like, Bob, listen, the reality is I could go out tomorrow and do a 2.4-mile swim and 112-mile bike ride, and that would take basically nothing out of me. And people at the Tri Club are still like, oh my God, I can't believe that takes nothing out of the guy. But the reality is because of your background, because of so many days on the saddle and so many days as a, you know, swimmer growing up, that's reality, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It really doesn't affect me at all, especially at the intensity that we do it at, you know, and it's just the run, you know, and then that. So it was it's always been a very simple equation, you know, learn to run and you can be competitive. And the other thing is, you know, Tim Kerrison and Brett Kirby at Nike have indicated that, you know, at some point soon we're going to have a big breakthrough, you know, like all this work is really going to, it's going to pay off. You know, you're going to have a performance where it all clicks, and you have a great performance, and then we're away. And you know, I think Italy, we're all pretty happy with that, with how it worked out. And you know, especially considering how much effort I put into the race. And yeah, you know, obviously the plan is now to continue to improve. There's no way we would have gone there and raced had we not think that it was better for my preparation for Kona.
Right.
And everyone has a differing view, but as I pointed out, there's no one else that I'll line up next to on that start line on October 12 that has rode at the Olympics or ridden in the World Tour. And I wouldn't expect what I do to work for any of them, like none of them, as I wouldn't bother trying to figure out how to, you know, prepare like a you know, for Alistair Brownlee or a Jan Frodeno. I mean, I don't go to the track and run, you know, 2 minute 30 kilometres because I just can't do it.
Right.
So, you know, or swim, you know, Frodeno could knock out 1 minute 100 metres in the pool, you know, without even breaking a sweat if that's possible in the water. You know, I'm flat out doing a minute 20.
Right.
But that means nothing when we line up on that line on October 12 and that cannon fires. It's, yeah, you're all there together, you know, and we all put our swim skins on the same way, as they say. So, yeah, everyone's got a fair chance to win the race.
Was there a run workout this summer that you were given and you're looking at it going, there is no way I could do this? And was there a time where you felt like, oh my God, I how am I going to do this?
Yeah, I think the 40K run where the last sort of 20K I was doing 1K pretty easy and a K at 3:30. And that took a week to sort of psychologically prepare myself.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I averaged 3:50 or so for the 40K, you know, well on, you know, the pace that I ran on the weekend even. Yeah, that was something I never thought I'd be doing, 3:30 kilometer pace, you know, at the end of a 40K run. And but, you know, that was the thing on the weekend. That was the plan, to be calm and be patient, knowing that if I needed the speed, I had it. And the more calm and patient I could be early in the run and relax, you know, the more I had to tap into, you know, down the stretch. And that's what I was able to do in Roth, for example, in the last 10K. I was able to run away from those guys. And that's sort of the way we're prepared. Having said that, we've always also prepared to go out pretty fast and deal with that, and then find a way to finish it off at the end. So, you know, you got to be prepared for everything. I mean, people have said, "Oh, the conditions would have favoured me in Kona last year, and this, that, and everything else." But if you want to be the real champion, you know, the real champion, you got to be able to prove that you can win no matter what the conditions,
right,
and no matter what happens in the race. And and that's something I've always dreamed of being, is a real, real champion, you know, one that people can remember for a while. And that's what I'm going to continue to work towards, you know, being in that position. So,
you know, a lot of people look at Kenworth leading into this year as, okay, Cam is going to be first off the bike and let's figure out what type of gap he needs to potentially win the race. When you run the way you've been running this summer in a 2:45, does that change things for you, where you start thinking, you know what, I'm obviously more than just a swim bike guy. The run is a weapon as well. And no matter where I'm at, if those guys are with me off the bike, I feel like I can run with anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like that. I love a running race. I have no qualms in that. I mean, and I guess it's a bit back to Josh with his swimming, you know, and this is sort of what I said to him when he had so many guys there. I said, yeah, mate, but they all knackered themselves to be with you. I mean, I'll do my thing on the bike, and I know that extends anyone in the world. So if they're with me, I know that they're just as tired, if not more tired than I am. And now that I'm able to run, I'll back myself at some point. I can pull away.
Yes.
And so that's just sort of what you have to be prepared for, because you just sort of have no idea how the race is going to pan out. And, it's exciting. But, you know, Bob, I've never, ever seen myself as a strong cyclist or a good swim biker. You know, I've always been focused on trying to learn how to do Ironman triathlon to the best of my ability.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never, ever, you know, thought that that was anything, being able to get off the bike first, because I didn't win the race. And that's what I'm there to do. And I've always been 100% focused on putting it all together. And you know, it takes time. You know, I'm not Superman. And it's taken us a while. But as my coaches have said, you continue to put in the work. At some point, it's really going to click for you, and it feels like we're sort of finally getting to that point.
When I look at the field this year with someone like an Alistair Brownlee coming over, and you've had a chance to watch him ride the bike, the guy obviously can ride the bike, and
yeah.
You've got Jan Frodeno, who's had was injured last year, and going into that race, we thought, oh my God, the guy just ran a 106 in South Africa, and he's in a different planet. Patrick Lyon-Gay's run the race 2 years in a row. Sebastian
yeah.
Kienle, I think, just had the second fastest run in Nice when you've got Brownlee
yeah.
and everybody else there. The
yeah.
field, which I'm sure you love, it's the best people on the planet are going to be in the starting line on October 12th. That,
yeah.
I'm guessing, is exactly what you want.
Oh, I mean, I want the race to be as fast and hard as possible. You know, I want the fast swimmers as hard as they can. You know, the bike will be what it'll be, whether I dictate the pace or not. I'm not sure what'll pan out there. And then the run, well, you know, it's that's obviously generally a bit of a death march there in Kona. So, but, you know, it is interesting, isn't it, when you look at it. The swim's the same speed, and Patrick has broken Mark's record, or it's dubious
yep.
whether he's even broken it, considering how it was timed back in the old days. You know, the bike is the only thing that's improved, you know.
It really is, yep.
In the past 30 years. So, so that's sort of quite fascinating. And it's what's fascinating for me personally and also encouraging is the fact that guys have worked on improving their bike without being able to improve everything else. And we've approached it from a very different angle. We're trying to improve everything all the time. And that sort of, you know, I think whoever wins this year will really do something pretty spectacular. You know, I think they'll need to win, so which is how it should be. So that's really exciting. You know, across all three disciplines.
So we also back this year, and he's been dealing with, like you had some injuries during the season. Lionel Sanders had injuries, and he's back. And what I think is nice, you don't see there wasn't a lot of racing from him this year, so maybe he's a little under the radar. But you obviously have raced him before in Kona and other
yep.
places. I'm sure he's not somebody you're discounting.
Who's that? Sorry, Lionel. Oh, well, I mean, I still maintain that the greatest performance I've seen in my time in the sport was Lionel's performance in Arizona, where I've been there. You know, I mean, people talk about records and all these different things, but when you're not there or you don't know, you don't really know. I was fortunate enough to be in the field in Arizona in 2016. Was one of the first races I did as a professional. And I had a great swim. I was in the front. It was in a wetsuit, and I rode the bike. And Lionel actually took a little bit of time out of me, and then obviously sprinted past me like I was, you know, sucked the hat off my head and broke the world record. And that, to me, you know, knowing how that course was, knowing how fair that race was, what he did was nothing short of, you know, phenomenal. And has always been in my mind the yardstick. I don't really look at Frodeno's performance in Ross. For starters, they don't even do the same course anymore. You know, Jan set that, and then the course was changed. The following year, Bart Arnault couldn't even break 8 hours on the course, on the new course, and then
right.
they modified it again. So you can't compare what Jan did to anyone else because none of us have even had a chance to do that course again. And likely Tim Don, you know, in Brazil. There's not a lot of athletes that go down to Brazil, but Arizona, you know, what Lionel did was just extraordinary. And I'm disappointed for Lionel that he hasn't gone on from that. I mean, he obviously had a great performance in Kona the following year and some results, you know, some special performances sort of scattered. But I would have felt, you know, after Arizona, he would have gone on to dominate the sport, you know, for a long, long period of time. So I'll never, ever discount Lionel. And, and until you cross the fish line is the only time I'll be checking to see where Lionel is, you know, to make sure that he's behind me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's and he's just great. He's just great for the sport. He's just a great character, and you know, the sport's really lucky to have someone like him.
So coming over from professional cycling and becoming a professional triathlete, compare the two. Are you enjoying? It seems like in triathlon, personalities can shine through a little bit more. What are your thoughts in terms of being a professional cyclist and then become a professional triathlete?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, one thing I'm not is, cycling is a very, you know, we say flick or be flicked. You've got to be pretty ruthless. You know, I mean, I guess you got to look no further than the glowing example of Lance Armstrong of the mentality that's successful in cycling. And I'm definitely not like that. You know, I'm not saying that I'm Mother Teresa, but I love, you know, giving people my time. I love people being excited about, you know, what I'm trying to do and appreciate the show that I'm trying to put on. And I love to, you know, be in an environment where I don't feel like we're put on a pedestal. I feel like I'm just lining up like everyone else and trying to do my best. And in cycling, you tend to be in the bubble. You know, everyone thinks they're pretty special, and you don't feel as connected, you know, with people. In fact, people don't feel like they can approach you or that it's a privilege or an honour to be able to talk to you. I mean, but for my personality, I'm obviously as happy as a pig in mud in triathlon. I love it. You know, I love meeting people. I love people hearing about people's stories. And I learn something from every single story, you know, and that's for me is the big difference. And I love now being able to train with those guys and be around those guys and then watch them race and huge supporters, obviously, of all my mates that race, and they all do pretty well. So that's great to see as well. But it's certainly not a sport that that got the best out of me. You know, I just didn't have the same hunger and desire to figure out how to be the best when I was cycling, like I have in triathlon. And
Any of your cycling buddies looking at this sport now and going, you know what, that looks pretty fun. I think I might want to jump into this.
Yeah, I'd say all of them, to be honest.
Really?
I mean, pretty much all of them have said something. I mean, Geraint Thomas obviously is the key one. I mean, he's been on the treadmill since the Tour de France. I mean, that's been his main form of keeping fit. You know, he's planning on having a real proper crack at triathlon in, you know, about, you know, between 3 to 5 years, depending on how he feels with the cycling, and he's laying the groundwork already. But Richie Port actually sent me a message a couple of weeks ago about which pair of shoes I'm most comfortable with and think would give him the most support. So he's planning on getting back into running, and he swims already. He swims with me during the year whenever we're together, and he loves swimming, so he's maintained that. So yeah, I mean, that's just a couple for him. He's obviously said he'd like to do one. I would be very surprised if a lot of guys, you know, didn't get into it, or at least, you know, do it because they just want to enjoy being fit. As I've said to them all, I said, you finish your cycling career as a pretty emaciated, skinny, you know, crinkled up human. You know, triathlete, it'll give you a body back that'll look after you for the rest of your life. Get you some muscles and a bit of beef back on the bones and make you a bit more capable of playing with your kids. So, I think we'll see a lot of them, you know, at varying levels of interest, you know, from simply being happy to get one, you know, get through one or enjoy the sport or I think, you know, potentially if Richie decides to, you know, serious contenders to raise the level even more and Geraint as well, of course. So, yeah, I think that's great.
Absolutely. So meanwhile, we're watching Ironman Italy and you're running away and here comes Alex Zanardi, who's one of the hand cycle athletes, former Formula One guy who lost both legs in a horrific crash. And now he's won a number of gold medals in hand cycling. And he's won Ironman a number of times over there in his kneeler. He's going by you in the run because obviously he's in a racing chair. And you've got your CAF visor on, and you're pointing at the CAF visor. Having someone like Zanardi go by, I bet, gets you pretty pumped up.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously follow all the, you know, everything to do with your foundation, all the guys there, and I knew they'd warned me about a cave before that it was coming, and I was really excited because I hadn't actually met him.
Yeah.
And so I kind of wanted to say hello and have a little conversation with him the same way I would with other guys on the run. But when he approached and he realized, he acknowledged me, but his face, I mean, it was twisted in pain, and it just made me realize, you know, what these guys go through. I just was just, you know, blown away, and him, and then thinking about the course, and we'd just been over cobblestones and all sorts of things, and he's in his chair and he's only got his arms, and I was just, I mean, I had absolute admiration for the guy. I couldn't have been more in awe of what he was doing. And so we went through an aid station, and so I just grabbed as many sponges as I could and then just sprinted. I think I was doing about 3:15 pace all of a sudden to squeeze some water on his back to try and cool him down. And then he was off, and Yeah. I mean, that's something about the sport that I love, Bob. You know, I don't do that stuff so people, you know, for notice that I genuinely, as you know, I'm a big, you know, real supporter of everything that you guys do there at CAF. Massive supporter and fan, have been for a while now, and I wanted to bring as much attention to that as possible, to your foundation and what great stuff you do, and what a better example than, you know, with Alex and Artie on the footage. And that's being able to be there and be able to do those things. You can't do that in a bike race.
No.
You don't get that thrill. You don't get to feel that human side. And I certainly didn't. I mean, at that time, I was actually having a little bit of a tough patch. Tough patch in as much as, you know, you're 25K in, and it doesn't matter how slow you're running or how easily you're taking it. It starts to creep up on you. And you know, you start thinking about Kona, and then you also realise you're on world record sort of pace, and what do you do? I realised that, you know, I wasn't going to try and break the world record, but I was going to try and look after myself as much as possible. And certainly seeing Alex go past, I forgot about my tight calf muscles and just got on with it and got through the day. So, you know, the amazing thing about that guy was we were at the presentation the next morning, and they, you know, obviously talked about that category and what he'd won, what he'd achieved, but he couldn't be there because he was out racing the 70.3. So he got out of bed and got and done it half the next day.
Oh my God.
Exactly. Just think about that.
No, he won the Ironman distance, and then the next day he's doing a 70.3.
Yeah, which he obviously won that too. So,
God.
Yeah, phenomenal.
So, you'll be here for Best Day and Try, October 20th, and we'll have you on a team again. And that day is pretty special for you.
I mean, I've been the last couple of years, and I guess on the Sunday, the thing that really I remember is watching the kids. You know,
the kids
run their little race. I mean, that's just that just blows you away. You know, they start out life like that, and they don't care. They don't feel sorry for themselves. You know, they're just out there doing it. And they don't want you to feel sorry for them either. And the day before, the Saturday, you know, when the kids first get their racing limbs, as you like to call them, and they're tripping over and, you know, face full of dirt. And, you know, I've complained about my broken nose. I'd love to know the injury toll after that weekend of these kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just gives you a completely different perspective, you know, on what dealing with adversity is. And that's, you know, you look at it as an Artie, you know, he'd already achieved everything in life that most people would be very happy with in his racing career. He could have been gone away and just sort of dealt with his, you know, injuries and lived life pretty comfortably for someone in a wheelchair. But instead, you know, he decides to go out and try and achieve even more in another sport, and that is just to be around people like that. They've all got that mentality. Is just so inspiring, and just the stuff you draw on when you have those days where you think, oh, you know, I don't really want to do it today. You think about the ones that don't have a chance to do it, or the ones that still get out there and get it done. You know, dealing with stuff that you could never comprehend. So you know, it's a real honour to be able to be a part of that, and very grateful that you have Fallon and I, and of course the dog comes too.
Yes.
Down there for the best weekend in Tri.
We always love having you, and we know that you don't open yourself up to a lot of sponsorships. You know, you're with companies that you believe in, and I know how expensive that real estate is on the top of your head in that visor, and the fact that you're wearing a CAF visor means the world. It's really a big statement saying, listen, I'm doing this. Yeah, I'm doing this for me, but I'm also doing this because I want to make a difference. That's a hell of a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I draw a lot from having it on my head, Bob. So trust me, it goes both ways. So it's a real privilege to wear it. And there's plenty of guys wearing Red Bull hats. They didn't need one on my head. I'm much happier doing my own thing.
And we'll be doing on the afternoon of the Best Day in Tri, probably 4 or 5 o'clock, we'll be doing a little Q&A for Tri Club of San Diego. We've already set that up. And
yep.
It's going to be great.
I'm a live member down there. So yeah,
you're here. So what the hell?
Yeah.
Might as well do it. I love it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Hey, Cam, thank you, as always, for all your support. And I look forward to seeing you in Kona in, just a few days.
Yep. Great. Can't wait to see you out there. Breakfast with Bob next. And then
that's it.
Love it.
Cam Werf has been our guest again. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by You Can Perform Workout Energize, as GenerationYouCan.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops, by Polar. Winners are made of blood, sweat, and data by our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Help out. Go to challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com, and follow us on YouTube and Facebook for Breakfast with Bob starting October 7th. And as always, endurance lives here.